Welcome, everyone, to the Pain and Paper podcast. It is time for another D-Genesis lore drop. And this time, we are talking about the second of two weird projects coming at you from your favorite evil corporation. It is Project Free Spirit. You will learn all about it, almost everything about it. You will learn a lot. And if you want to learn even more, you can come to our YouTube channel. It's Pain and Paper. And there you can find many, many more lore drops in video form with cool pictures, art from D-Genesis, and lots of other cool things. And now, people, I hope you're checking out Clan Wars. The Kickstarter is about to start, I think. And now, enjoy this podcast. In the year 2173, 100 years after the devastating events of the Eschaton, the first sleepers of Project Tannhäuser awoke, ready to conquer the ruins of Europe and implement their reign according to the memetic protocols implanted into their minds. On their journeys, they encountered sleepers almost like them, but equipped with different and enhanced technology, and most important, different memetic protocols. These sleepers were apparently part of another program called Free Spirit. These Free Spirit sleepers could be told apart from their Tannhäuser siblings by a strange symbol engraved in their weapons and biometric suits. The very same symbol could be found on various ships that had been entering the harbor of Aquitaine for many decades. The chroniclers that control the city of Aquitaine and its harbor had located these colossal ships floating somewhere in the Atlantic. It was easy for the tech-savvy cult to override the programmed routes of these ships and lure them to the coast of Western Franca. On board, they found no one, not even corpses, but the equipment they salvaged from the huge ships was incredibly sophisticated and provided the cult with extreme advantages and technological knowledge that was used by the chroniclers to maintain power not only in the region of Franca. Chronicler scholars who have studied the history of the Protectorate know that the same symbol can be found on the entrance to the so-called Grindworks, a labyrinth located beneath the city of Exalt. This, of course, is no coincidence. The strange sleepers, as well as the ships manipulated and salvaged by the chroniclers, were part of a secret project called Project Free Spirit. It can be viewed as a counter-project to Project Tannhäuser, an alternative path humanity could take after the Eschaton. Like Tannhäuser, Free Spirit was the brainchild of RG co-founder Jerome Gatrell, an alternative option to the authoritarian reign of the Marauders and the sleeper agents of Project Tannhäuser. It most probably developed out of a collaboration between Gatrell and the brother of RG board member Viktor Karmanov, Nikita Karmanov. We know that Nikita Karmanov worked together with Gatrell in secret to create the corresponders that were implanted into the bodies of the Recombination Group board members who would later become the Marauders. The corresponders manipulated the Marauders' nanite bloodstreams, turning them entropic and thus dooming the Marauders to hunt Tannhäuser sleepers for their blood in order to survive. Nikita Karmanov also played a major role in the creation of Exalt and the so-called grindworks beneath it, about which you will hear more later. Nikita Karmanov himself received a nanite treatment before the Eschaton and became part of a special unit of 7 free spirit sleepers that were supposed to function as an opposition to the 7 marauders. The names of these 7 free spirits are Diamondal, Trice, Enzef, Kultrin, Helios, Karakhan, and Eurus. Some Palers, who are supposed to be loyal servants to the agents of Project Tannhäuser, have turned their backs on the lives inside the dispensers and left in order to serve one of these so-called sleeper prophets. Let us take a look at the 7 free spirits. The first of them to awake from his cryogenic bed was probably Diamondal, a mole that had been installed into the first cascade of sleepers of Project Tannhäuser by Jerome Gatrell. Diamondal acted as a member of Team Castor, exploring and taking control of the Black Lung, until he managed to gain access into the city of Exalt. Exalt and the grindworks beneath the city were somewhat of a centerpiece in the planned orchestration of Project Free Spirit. Not all of the grindworks' functions have been revealed yet, but still a pretty clear picture of its purpose can be drawn. The Grindworks, also known as the Basalt Plain, is a vast underground labyrinth located beneath the city of Exalt. It was revealed to have been designed and developed by Nikita Karmanov under Gatrell's supervision. The primary purpose of the giant maze, with its shifting black walls, was to override the memetic conditioning programs of Project Tannhäuser. Once a subject had made it through the maze, after a series of challenges, the former memetic imprint would be erased, replaced by something else. The mental embossing taking place inside the grindworks has the power of forming so-called constellations, alignments of different personal concepts. If at least 4 people descended into the maze, their archetypes would be overwritten in the course of their journey to form a bond between them that would allow them to work together and cooperate in the unity of their constellation. But the grindworks turned out to be more than a tool for unionization. Behind its shifting walls, treasures of technological marvel could be found, and even more than that. The free spirit Diamondal was not the first to unearth the powers of the grindworks. In the era of the beast, immediately after the Eschaton, when the sleepers were still lying in their cryo chambers, a nameless tribe roaming the area of former Germany discovered Exalt and the Grindworks. Interactions with the Grindworks catapulted them into new dimensions of knowledge and technological understanding. The Grindworks, or the Basalt Plain, was a mystery at first, but then the nameless tribe discovered that entering the labyrinth from different points would make the structure come to life. The embossing of the entire tribe took place. Humans with different psychological concepts could align, work together for progress. Furthermore, the realignment deleted all former protocols, making the members of the tribe immune to memetic manipulation from Tannhäuser agents that awoke in 2173. Gatrell and Nikita Karmanov tried to keep Exalt, the Grindworks, and the entire Free Spirit program a secret from the Recombination Group board members. Yet we know that the secret came out, causing Argyr to implant an emergency protocol into the first cascade of sleepers of Project Tannhäuser. The order, locate and destroy Exalt. But the Tannhäuser agents of the first cascade were too late. The powers of the Grindworks had turned the nameless tribe into a prosperous and advanced society, capable of defending themselves against memetic manipulation as well as the threats of violence from the agents of Project Tannhäuser. They had become exalters, and the Free Spirit Diamondall was welcomed with open arms. With the help of an artifact called the Aegis Helmet, capable of disabling the nanite currents circulating in the wearer's bloodstream for an extended period of time, Diamondall was able to circumvent the defense systems of the Grindworks, most probably preventing carriers of active nanites from entering or leaving the Grindworks alive. Diamondall's artifact allowed him to pass Gatrell's red line, and he scurried in and out of the Grindworks, leading those early explorers through the darkness before bringing them back into the light. Every descent yielded new discoveries, unearthed new secrets, and propelled the Exalters into new developments. The facility was too vast to be mapped out by one individual alone, and the Aegis Helmet was dangerous to use for more than a few hours at a time. Diamondall needed help. Like a Pied Piper, the Free Spirit rallied more and more Palers around him, cleansing them of Tannhäuser conditioning, turning them into the first generation of Diamondall's halos. With his halos in tow, Diamondall crawled through the massive halls of the Radiance, investigated the pathways, cracked hidden portals, and crossed deep into the basalt plain. Nobody was as familiar with the sprawling underground city as the Free Spirit, who was convinced that Gatrell specifically chose him for this mission. Diamondall became obsessed with the labyrinth, believing the vast subterranean network to be a physical manifestation of the Creator's mind, the winding tunnels and serpentine intersections resembling the tangled neural highways of Gatrell's own brain. The more Diamondall understood, the closer he felt to grasping the purpose of it all. Free Spirit, Agathopoeia, the final judgment. But Diamondall is just a mere cog in the greater machine, a catalyst destined to accelerate the reaction, but never truly integrate with it. The Grindworks is his tomb. It is Pandora's box, from which Diamondall takes artifacts of immense power and places them in the hands of the people above ground, just as he was instructed to. Biometrically encoded relics now flood the study halls of the Exalters. Among the treasures are polymorphic corresponders, bearing the shapes of animal medallions. The Trizyklion, allegedly the key to a hall the size of the universe, Jahamut's will, and countless other bizarre contraptions that interact with the sun disks the halos are equipped with. Decades pass, and the labyrinth is now imprinted within Diamondall's head. Yet the sleeper prophet keeps on digging, following an imaginary red threat that flickers before his inner eye, until he finally realizes that he is trapped within a monolithic dispenser holding other free spirits that must be found and awakened in order for the plan to commence. After 100 years of wandering through the maze, Diamondall encounters another just like himself. Enzeph is the first to be redeemed from her eternal sleep and brought to the surface. Her arrival heralds the epiphany the Exalters have been waiting for, and she is cheered on by the masses who crown her the cherub of the realm, the divine protector of knowledge. Trice comes second. Diamondall loses two of his most faithful halos during the awakening, devoured by the merciless pylons of the basalt plain. An agonizing loss. The sleeper prophet expected no less. He is certain that the grindworks is a series of balances and scales. For every reward, there must be a prize. Trice and Enzeph are the hierophants of a new era of enlightenment. They offer direction to the civilization hatched by the power of the grindworks, positioning themselves as harbingers of vengeance and justice, capable of pinpointing the ire of the Exalters towards the enemies surrounding them. Three corresponders are activated, each tuned to match the nanite stream of a target marauder, and Trice and Enzeph assemble the warrior squadrons of Exalt into two legions. The crusade of retribution begins. Diamondall stays behind and continues his odyssey through the grindworks in search of other siblings. He should be successful one last time. At the very core of the labyrinth, there lies another in a frigid chamber, covered in ancient cooling gels and frozen in time, dreaming of his imminent awakening. Cultrin rises from his grave and takes three stumbling steps. Diamondall bears witness to it through eyes glazed over by nanite milk, his hands trembling from aspiration and every fiber of his being oscillating from the grandeur of the moment. But the Golden City demanded a price. The sluice slammed shut, swallowing Diamondall and releasing Cultrin into the world. Alone. Cultrin is the embodiment of revenge, the final act, deliverance personified. He has come to engage the unrestrained capacity of the Exalters and charge alongside them towards the summit. He is a leader for a leaderless tribe, a warlord destined to vindicate humanity from its collective sin. Cultran's speeches crack the atmosphere of the Exaltian paradigm, grant focus to the Empire, and lock their crosshairs on the conclusive target. There's a world out there, ready for the taking. Exalt rumbles, spurred into action as it sheds the haze of a century of relativism. Cultran is the lightning bolt of energy that ignites the golden civilization with ambition and determination. To become exalted, mankind must be embossed, every last one of them. The city wars begin, and Cultran leads the Exaltian armies from city to city, raising them one by one, until one day, the leader of the armies of Exalt disappears without a trace. Simultaneously, a coalition between the cults, marauders, and the people of the Black Lung serves a deadly blow to the city of Exalt and the civilization it birthed. The survivors of the cataclysm flee in droves from the ruins, clutching onto their last belongings. But where to go? The world hates them and will not forgive. Only the Liquids open their arms, offering refuge and a place for the Exalters to heal. We will hear more about Cultran, Trice, Enzef, and the Exalters of Liqua later. Let us jump ahead a couple of decades to when the glorious days of Exalt are nothing but a forgotten period rotting in the history books of the Protectorate. Free Spirit had been defeated, but it was not dead. In the year 2573, the free spirit Helios wakes up according to plan in a dispenser in France. From a document shown in the Justician book, Moloch, we can deduce that the free spirit Helios was called Admiral Barstaff in the days before the Eschaton. The document contains a conversation between Jerome Gatrell and Admiral Barstaff, in which Gatrell informs him about his role in the plan to stop Project Tannhäuser. After awakening, Barstaff, or Helios, knows immediately what he has to do. After assessing the situation, he attempts to find the location of various freighters in the Atlantic supposed to carry free spirit equipment and weaponry. But something has gone wrong. Helios suspects that the freighters have been hijacked, and in fact he is correct. Many of the ships Helios is trying to locate lie in the harbor of Aquitaine, stolen and salvaged by the chroniclers. But Helios is still receiving a strong signal coming from somewhere far beyond Britain, somewhere out on the ice barrier. He rallies a group of halos and sets off in his search of the submarine named the Black Atlantic. 10 years later, in 2583, the Halo Arnica discovers the bunker of Helios, but he is too late. His god is no longer in the chamber, as the Halo had hoped, and thus, Arnica's search for his master begins. On a journey up north, Helios is lured into a trap set up by the Marauder Argyre and eventually he is captured in the year 2592. The sleeper prophet has ventured too far into Britain, the realm of Argyr the Vulture, in search of the Black Atlantic. Argyr's Pictons capture the free spirit and slaughter his halos. They place Argyr's yoke around Helios' neck and bring him to London, where they deliver him to their master. Through the use of his yoke, the Marauder forces Helios to partake in his plan. With the help of Jahamet's spear, Helios is given the task of repairing and aligning a Thor laser that Argyr salvaged in Bath. However, the coordinates are wrong, and the spear is missing two important components. After 4 years of captivity, Arnica rescues Helios in 2596. They both flee over the ruins of Plymouth to Brest, where they seek shelter. In the course of the Black Atlantic adventure, Helios manages to gain control of all parts of Jahamet's will and also locates and enters the Black Atlantic submarine. Helios uses Jahamet's will to operate the submarine and launches two rockets carrying nuclear warheads towards Europe. One rocket is headed towards Bath, aiming for the Thor laser Argyr tried to use to shoot down the Minerva space orbiter, where the Marauder suspects Jerome Gatrell. Yet in the last moment, Argyr manages to deflect the rocket before it can destroy Bath. The other rocket flies towards the city of Aquitaine. Helios wants to take revenge for the stolen free spirit freighters salvaged by the chroniclers. The city is hit, and almost 100,000 people are killed by the explosion. After launching the two rockets, Helios decides to destroy Jahamet's will, most probably in order to keep the Marauder Argyr from finding it and using it to destroy the Minerva orbiter. The paler halo Arnica, perplexed by Helios' plan to destroy the artifact, attacks his master and supposedly helps the player characters to defeat and kill the free spirit. Helios' mission is considered a success by other free spirit sleepers, namely Trice and Enseth, who decide to infiltrate the underground of Justitian. As mentioned before, the free spirits Trice and Enseth went on a crusade of retribution against the Marauders, who they viewed as the architects of Project Tannhäuser. We also learn that three corresponders, probably all salvaged from the Grindworks, had been activated prior to the war campaign. The three activated corresponders most probably belonged to the Marauders Aspera, Gusev, and Argyr. The fall of Exalt and the disappearance of Coltrane forced both Trice and Enseth into hiding, but it did not quench their thirst for revenge against the Marauders and the agents of Project Tannhäuser. Today, Trice operates from within Justitian, trying to piece together how exactly Exalt could fall, and more importantly, who was responsible for it. She has identified the Marauders Gusev and Aspera as the culprits and prepares her next move against them. Her ultimate goal is restarting the Grindworks and bringing Exalt back to its former glory. Trice finds the foot soldiers she needs for her plan within the bowels of Justician. The paler demagogue Vesna and her horde would serve her well. Yet another player has entered the stage to extend his influence over Vesna. The Needle Corium. You can find out more about this conflict in my Needle Tower disaster video. Trice's sister Enzef is not as involved in the tribulations of the Moloch since she has made Liqua her refuge for years. Directing her halos to comb through the Stukov desert for remains of broken dispensers and traces of crystallized nanite clusters. She is looking for anything that will help her solve the riddles within the architecture of the city of Liqua, especially within the mimetic walls. She tries to receive a sign from Gatrell himself. She understands that she is part of a greater plan, one that encompasses her sister Trice and the remaining free spirits. Helios's emergence and his attack on Aquitaine were a sign that the hour of reckoning was about to strike. Have all the pieces fallen into place? Is this the moment of retribution for the fall of Exalt? Will the sleeper prophets get their revenge and dethrone the marauders once and for all? Enzef has a secret radio connection with the Neo-Exalters living in Liqua, and while Xyphod is the nominal water lord of Neo-Exalt, the real governing happens behind the scenes and beneath the surface, guided by Enzef, her halos, and the Zodiac Ulthus. What the Neo-Exalters today hope for is guidance, seemingly not provided by their free spirit leaders. They dream of the return of their old guide, Diamondall, who is still trapped in the remnants of the Grindworks. If only they could find him, just like how he once found them. What both Trice and Enzef are unaware of is that their former leader, Cultrin, is in fact somewhat alive and much closer than they think. Cultrin has become the pet of the Mother of Ravens. During the climax of the City Wars, the elusive leader of the Apocalyptics shattered the mind of Exalt's leader with a tempest of mimetic protocols and brought his self-righteous conquest to a sudden standstill. Cultrin was left without aim or purpose, turned into an immortal slave who acts blindly to the Mother of Ravens every beck and call. By day, he is a torpid thrall, crumbled up in an empty cell in the nest of the carrion birds. By night, she sends him out to hunt for those who have crossed the line. Never will the Mother of Ravens allow for any of Gatrell's plans to come to fruition. Every scrapper rummaging the wastelands, looking for an entry into Exalt's Grindworks, is a potential threat. When they pass the ruined conditioning pylons of the Grindworks' outer perimeter, they trigger an ancient implanting mechanism. An invisible laser beam subconsciously projects images into the scrapper's retina and plants the first meme. Advise others of this paradise. restart the engines. The scrappers don't even realize that anything happened to them, but they rush back to Justician, overwhelmed by an urge of impulsive activity. They need to do something, exchange ideas, and bring their brothers and sisters back to this place so they can start an excavation. However, none of them ever got that far. The Head Collector, as Cultrin is now called, found them all, one after the other, and took their heads. All but one. Xander, a scrapper who once searched the ruins of Exalt and salvaged a peculiar artifact. What the poor scrapper didn't realize, the artifact he pulled from the ground was the Grindworks' emergency power supply. With his greedy hands, he turned off the conditioning pylons and cut the Grindworks off from its last remaining energy source. The meme chambers of the underground facility went into blackout. Unknowingly, Xander rendered the only device useless that could have saved Cultrin from the lobotomized state of mind he is trapped in. There are two remaining free spirits we know of. One of them is the man known as Kara Khan. After the Eschaton, Kara Khan appears in Sophia, a stranger without a name, for he has yet to earn one. Later, he will be quoted to have said, "Sophia called me." He roams the city's forest parks, climbs the Vitosha Mountains, and waits for sunrise there. He directs the rebuilding of the Cathedral of the Patriarchs and descends into the ruins of forgotten buildings. The customs officers, city guards, and the boyars have long since sided with him after he replaced Voivod Victor. He now calls himself Kara Khan, the Black Leader. He personally takes care of the Paler problem by fumigating the bunkers with a handful of trusted companions. He gives salvaged machine guns and body armor to his officers, keeping the sun disks for himself. At his side is a black woman, clad in the Voivod's garb. The crisscross patterns are unknown, not pointing towards any known clan. Her voice is deep and calm, and she only talks to her Kara Khan, speaking in an African dialect that no one around understands. Depending on the light, she seems to be ancient or very young, and she never smiles. Is she an emissary of Tripled's Bank of Commerce, his bodyguard, or his lover? "My heart and my soul," he calls her when talking to his officers, "too big to carry within me." Today, the city is a mirror image of Kara Khan's own attributes. Challenging, tricky, disciplined, he has long since taken its motto for his own: grows, but does not age. We know who Kara Khan, the leader of Sophia, really is from this picture of his identification tag. Kara Khan is the alias of Nikita Karmanov, the designer of the Grindworks and leading figure in the Corresponder Project, which ran under the codename Kara Khan. We also learn that he was a sleeper of Cascade 400, and thus probably awoke in the year 2473. Karakhan was responsible for triggering yet another major event of the Degenesis metaplot. It was him who sent the signal that caused the marauder Chernobog, who is in fact Nikita Karmanov's twin brother, Viktor Karmanov, to start his bloody march towards the southeast. It was Karakhan who climbed the Botev, the highest peak of the Balkan Mountains, and sent the signal that was received all over Europe. It seems reasonable to assume that Karakhan, in sending Chernobog on his war campaign, was acting out a sequence of the Corresponder Project, Project Karakhan. But it is still unclear whether Chernobog's reaction to the signal and the ensuing uprising of the European clans was intended by the Free Spirit. In fact, the antenna upon the peak of the Botev is described as maybe the only mistake the leader of Sofia ever made. Now Karakhan seems to be preparing for the worst, building up Sofia's defenses for the day of Chernobog's arrival. We do know that Karakhan's move and Chernobog's reaction caused a consequence that was most probably not intended by the Free Spirit, though. Chernobog's absence made it possible for the Storskis, the East Orkan clan traveling the forests in their giant trains, to build the train tracks that lead to the space station in Baikonur. Even though Karakhan's actions made the Storskis' progress possible and thereby helped the Needles in achieving their goals, we know that Karakhan and his Free Spirit Sleepers have plans that also involve the Fjulgur and Jahamet's will, and that run contrary to the plans of the Needles, namely the reactivation of the grindworks, for which the Fjulgur will be needed. We also don't know who the mysterious black woman on Karakhan's side is, but the fact that her appearance changes from ancient to young could hint at some sort of biocloak, like the one that Trice is wearing, that was in fact created by Karakhan. The last of the seven free spirits is Eurus. Unfortunately, we know very little of him. He is also called the Hidden One and is mainly active in the Balkan region. He secretly controls several voivodules and settlements through information and dinars. Eurus chooses only a few palers as his halos and does not allow them to get to know each other. The palers communicate through a network of informers passing on the wishes of their sleeper prophet. Like Karakhan, Eurus seems to be an influential figure in the Balkan region, yet we do not know whether the two free spirits are in contact with each other or work together to any extent. In conclusion, we can summarize that the Free Spirit Project was an ideological counter to Project Tannhäuser and almost succeeded in becoming the leading ideology of post-Eschaton Europe. The disappearance of Kultrin and the fall of Exalt thwarted their success, but Helios's mission and its dire outcomes, the activation of Chernobog's Corresponder by Karakhan, and the covert actions of Trice and Enzef from the heart of the Protectorate, all show that the Free Spirits are still major players in the Degenesis metaplot, and we can only hope for more revelations in future releases.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. Thank you very, very much for watching. I hope you enjoyed this video. My open questions this time are... Does anybody have any infos on Eurus? He is quite the elusive man. And I couldn't find anything else but what I put in the video. All right. So we already voted on the topic of the next video. It will be Jahamet's Will. Probably a little shorter, but that's what I always say, and then we'll end up having almost 50-minute videos. Well, we'll see. People, do check out Clan Wars. Do check out My Little Game Ancients. And don't forget, don't ever forget to play tabletop role-playing games with your friends at home on a table. At a table. Now have a great one.